Today on the show, we discuss the evil bargain between heaven and hell in Doom Eternal, and why it deserved to end. Welcome to Lore Party, the podcast that explores the stories, characters, and universes of our favorite video games. I'm Connor.
And I'm Bruce. And this is our first kind of episode together.
But that's right.
We've actually known each other for quite some time before then, right?
It's pretty trippy. Yeah, it's like we're finally doing this, even though we've both been involved in Lore Party, you for longer than me for at least the last year or so. And we're finally here. We're finally doing it.
Bruce and Connor together again for the first time.
The gruesome twosome in effect. No, it's great. It feels good. And it feels even better knowing that we're kicking off season 7 of Lore Party with just a heater of a game, of a topic, talking about Doom Eternal today. I'm psyched.
I am super psyched. And I think that this is going to be a very interesting season for both of us and both of our different perspectives, because I am a very new Doom fan because I kind of just started literally this year playing Doom 2016 and then Doom Eternal on release. Like I'm a newbie Doomy. Is that what they is that what the kids call themselves?
That's the new official term. I'm calling it right now. That's the new official term.
Newbie Doomy. All right.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
And you are good. Doom veteran. Been there since the 90s, right?
I was kind of raised on it. It's crazy. First of all, let me say welcome. We're glad to have you.
Thank
in
you.
The circle. I was kind of raised on it. Like I was. It's one of the first video games I played. My really cool uncle would show me old DOS powered first person shooters on his computer, including like the old Wolfenstein and Duke Nukem games, and of course Doom and Doom 2, which were at the time installed on floppy disks. And so needless to say, I took those home and booted up all 15 of them or however many there were to install Doom 2 on my home computer. Yeah, I've been hooked ever since. I skipped a few entries. I didn't really ever play Doom 3. That's a bit of a departure for the series. I have definitely been on the Doom train, big fan for most of my life. And yeah, when 16 came out, the reboot, I was so excited to really just have a fresh take on the universe I love so much. And Eternal really kind of blew the scope out into just this unprecedented scale. Like we had Doom for a while and it was just a fun kind of
goofy card. It's Doom.
Yeah, right. You know what it is, you know what you're getting. It's a goofy, over the top kind of cartoonish, you shoot demons in the face and that's all you do. But 16 and especially Eternal really kind of broadened the scale of the story, the universe, the world building, and that's what we're here to talk about today.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, so Doom Eternal, to say the least, takes the conflict way beyond just an angry superhuman guy killing demons. Like it goes way deeper than that. And in Doom Eternal, we kind of get a sense of the demons themselves, what the realm of hell is all about, and the sort of counterpart to hell, a place called Urdak.
As below, so above.
Exactly. Yes. There is a flip side to that coin. There is a dark mirror of, well, I guess a brighter mirror, but as we'll discuss, it's actually still pretty dark. And that's, more or less the heaven allegory of the Doom setting is Urdak. It's the realm of the makers, and that is makers with a Y. Don't get it wrong. The conflict between hell and Urdak, and actually how that conflict becomes a bit of a partnership, forms a very key pillar of the plot of Doom Eternal, and the Slayer, who you play as, gets caught in the middle. So we're here to discuss that. On the surface, it may seem like, oh, hell, the makers, demons, angels, they're going to be enemies. Not quite.
Not quite at all. It starts to really unravel itself as you start to play more, that these are not just diametrically opposed dimensions that, you know, congregate on Earth. This is almost kind of like a devil's pact that has been created that you see in these codex entries and in these kind of conversations that you have with the con maker, who is sort of like God or goddess or God's wife.
It's sure.
A little unclear.
a very high ranking angel, at least some kind of leadership among the stand-ins for the higher power, so to speak. And you start to see how much the demons and the makers have in common, and sort of the common purposes they share, the common goals they share. And as the Slayer, you don't really care about any of that. You're just trying to save Earth. And so all of the complications and the political or sort of spiritual consequences be damned. Pardon the pun. Everything else is second. Everything else to the Slayer is secondary. No, it doesn't matter as long as he saves Earth. So that puts him into conflict with the makers. But we find out that throughout playing the game, we find out that Hell, over the eons, over countless ages, has conquered and consumed an uncountable number of worlds. And the Slayer's version of Earth is sort of the latest in a long line of planets to fall victim to Hell. But it goes deeper than that, as we've alluded to. We'll get into that later. At the same time, while Hell is consuming and, you know, taking over these other worlds, as we talked about, the parallel, the sort of the mirror image, we have Erdak also going around and quote-unquote uplifting some quote-unquote lesser races, sort of being that, benevolent visitors from another world who have great wondrous gifts of technology and they share it with the deserving. And that's what happened to a race called the Argenta. We learn about the Argenta and how they fit into the history of the Slayer, the history of Erdak and Hell.
And they're a very incredible civilization, literally
really
formed
are.
After this large spire goes through their planet and pretty much gives them all this strange superpower wraith ability that actually is almost, again, pun unintended, a godsend to the plans of both Erdak and Hell.
Right. When the Argenta meet the makers, they are gifted with, you know, technology, and they become a dominant life form in the multiverse, and they really claim their dominion. And, you know, they think, oh, we're finally ascending to greatness. But to Erdak, it's just, hey, we found some really useful puppets here. And that dynamic of Erdak taking advantage of another race while Hell also takes advantage of other races by eating them, it's a balancing act that carries on for ages and ages and ages. And what we're getting into today is the question of, you know, how that balance really wasn't balanced at all. It wasn't sustainable, really. It couldn't last. And fact is, it shouldn't have lasted.
That's really the whole fact of the matter of all of that. It all was just despicable, disgusting, but there was this feeling that you got from all of it of just when you look at it, you know, looking at just even our own world and how the energy crisis in our planet is, it's just something that you look at and say, that just can't be done forever.
Yeah, that's a great point, Bruce. There are these systems that, you know, we in real life see as, oh, it's always been done that way, so it kind of has to be done this way. We can't think of another way. But really, when you drill into the details, it really shouldn't be done this way. And the system was in place for so long that, of course, the makers and the demons thought, well, this is how it's always going to be. It's, you know, it's working out great for us. But what they didn't count on was the Doomslayer. He was the wrench in the machine, so to speak.
Just a big, giant adamantium wrench.
The size of blades and bullets flying out of it.
The size of a missile.
Right. You've never seen a bigger monkey wrench in the works. And what's really interesting is the Slayer didn't actually care about the balance. Everything that upset the quote-unquote balance that, you know, occurred because of the Slayer's actions, it was all kind of after the fact, or it was beside the point. His whole goal was saving Earth, but, you know, that's not what the makers wanted. But let's get into what they actually did want. You know, to do that, we'll have to take a closer look at that relationship between Hel and Erdak.
And it is a very strange relationship. I don't even know if it's contentious or not, or if it's, you know, a convenience, but there is an understanding between these two worlds, and that their betterment and their advancement will be based on their cooperation.
Yeah, cooperation doesn't seem like something the demons would ever be proficient at.
Yeah,
at all.
There's more to them than meets the eye. You may think like, oh, these are just bloodthirsty beasts. They just, you know, want to devour souls. They're driven by mindless hunger and nothing else. But as we see in not only Doom Eternal, but in the 2016 reboot, the demons and the Dark Lords of Hell are capable of really long-term thinking and kind of planning and making deals that benefit them over the course of time. They dealt with Olivia Pierce from the UAC. They saw that she was useful. Normally a demon might just, hey, human, eat her. But no, they thought she could be an instrument. She could open the way for us to invade Mars. On the flip side, the makers of Erdak may seem to be perfectly benevolent and they just want to share the gift of their knowledge, but they're actually out for no one but themselves. Everything they do has an ulterior motive, just kind of like the demons of Hel. There's always an ulterior motive. Everything they do is to advance their position somehow. So they may seem very, very different, but the demons and the makers are actually kind of two peas in a pod there.
Yeah, but I would you say there's some sort of fundamental difference in their approach?
I would say, yeah, definitely Hel is more aggressive. They're more the conquering type, and the makers are a bit more the building alliance and developing loyalties type. But the end result is still either keeping what they have, expanding what they have, or just maintaining their position by any means necessary. But by its own nature, also like you mentioned, this pact, it couldn't last forever. There's no way it could keep going until the end of time, because eventually, as we find out and as actually happens, eventually Hel would meet a world that couldn't be conquered, and Erdak would meet an individual it could not corrupt.
And that is the Doom Slayer, Doom Guy. That's right. And he is the most important part of this, but also the direct result of this. This unsustainable system, this horrible cycle of viciousness and greed, in part was ended by the Doom Slayer, but was in its own way the creator of the Doom Slayer. Doom Slayer was technically just a very, very lucky and angry individual space marine who was able to survive his first ride through Hel, which we see is like the actual first original Doom from 93. Mm-hmm. And he's taken in by the Argenta people. And as he's kind of adopted by them and showing his worth, he's not the Doom Slayer yet. That is like of myth and legend. That doesn't happen until he is taken by Seraphim, which is like a defector of Erdak, who actually fused the Doom Slayer with that Argent energy that has been, you know, fueling this terrible system for possibly eons now, with a thing called a divine machine.
The divinity machine.
Divinity machine. Mm-hmm. And this thing basically gave him all of that energy in one quick, giant burst. And that's sort of what drove him to be able to be this unstoppable force.
Right. So the Slayer is almost like a feedback loop of this
exactly.
balance,
I love
this dark pact. Yeah, he's like what happens if the system goes on too long and starts producing anomalies, or, you know, things you just didn't count on. And he's, like you said, a consequence of the system that ends up destroying the system. But what really kicks it off, though, the real catalyst for that is Erdak, via Hel, directly threatening the Slayer's homeworld, Earth. So there's like this proxy invasion of Hel on Erdak's behalf, where Earth is being consumed. Demons are prowling the streets, and humanity's on the brink of extinction. That gives the Slayer the motivation and kind of, honestly, the excuse he needs to just go ham and just tear ass through all of creation.
He barely needed one.
Yeah, he was on a hair trigger to begin with. He was like, that's it. That's what I need. Let's go. And he goes off. He does whatever is necessary. Literally just no one can stand in his
literally
way.
Literally cuts a swath through the entirety of several dimensions.
Right. All to save humanity, save Earth, and in the process, as a byproduct, put an end to this dark, evil, manipulative, quote-unquote, balance. I love using that word ironically, balance, in the process. That's kind of what he does almost on accident. Like, he doesn't care if the balance is ended.
And I think that's my favorite part about this, is that he's not being willed by some higher power. He's not, you know, some greater force in the universe saying, this is wrong and I am holier than thou and this cannot stand for much longer. It is literally just reaping what Erdak and the demons have sown so many millennia ago.
Yeah. He is the consequence of what they've done. And he's ending all of their hard work just because he's doing what naturally comes to him, and he's doing what he needs to do.
You make it sound like they're loading 16 tons back there and breaking their back and coming home to their family and their children back from the Soul Spire.
You know, the demons and the makers, they were just honest Joes, just trying to, you know, make an honest buck, feed their families. No. They were assholes. Let me put it plainly.
Demon Union has some pretty good benefits, though, I would say.
But you mentioned the Slayer doesn't have this attitude of, I'm doing what's right and I'm putting a stop to this evil system. He doesn't care.
I don't think he cares what he's doing is right. I think he knows that what he's doing is going to save people. But I think
that's all he cares about.
I think he lost morality a long time ago.
Or at least he doesn't have that petty need to just justify his actions. He doesn't feel the need to justify anything he does because he knows he's doing what he has to do. It's instinct to him.
It is. He's just making a beeline towards the biggest threat in the room. And if you're in the middle of it, I'm sorry.
you're getting turned into paste. That's just what's going to happen to you. I'm sorry.
The thing is, like, again, it's just this kind of inevitability of it, because why would Hel kneel before just one man? Why would Erdak and the Con Maker make this wide berth for this one man? And it's really, again, it's so poetic and so just ironic about all of this, is that if they just swallowed their pride, they would have been able to get out of this at least, you know, scot-free or okay. But that also is what makes them. This was gonna happen.
Right. What's interesting is while he's doing this, while he's on this crusade through Doom Eternal, he's being told at every opportunity, well, particularly by the Con Maker, but also by other characters, that he's being told, you shouldn't be doing this. You're upsetting the balance. They love to say that. They're upsetting this grand cosmic tapestry of creation. Like, it's all
foolish
going to be...
Foolish mortal, you know not what you meddle in the affairs of... Wait, what are you... Oh, no, stop, please.
What are you doing? You're tearing my brains out. Oh, God, please stop.
That's the whole game.
He catches them monologuing and he guts them alive. But they can't stop falling into this trope of that classic sci-fi trope of, you know not what you meddle in. But he does know. He just doesn't care. And it's kind of a source of arrogance, really. Or it comes out of a place of arrogance where the makers are like, we are our creation. We can't comprehend a vision of existence where we're not the ones there pulling the strings. Like, we just can't comprehend it. And so the idea that the Slayer would end, you know, all of their designs, they're like, that can't happen. Like,
it literally could not be imagined in their heads.
Right.
That just one guy could be able to do that.
Right. They're never going to stop and say, you know what? You're right. We'll leave Earth alone. Like that's never going to happen.
You know what? You made your case. I'll talk it over and we will reconvene at a later time.
I'll bring it up to the next committee hearing.
Like there's no diplomacy in, you know, such a high tier of this going on because they've never been challenged this way. So why would they care about one person, one mortal just walking around killing everything in sight?
Right. I think it comes back to this theme of the Slayer is there to upset the rules. He's the game changer. He's just that guy in the leather jacket who doesn't play by your rules. He's the bad boy from across the tracks, and you know you can't pin him down.
And you know, I think there's a Slayer in every kind of situation like this, in an unsustainable system that eventually there is going to be pressure building. Whether that's an unstoppable, divine, mortal-made god going through entire armies of the damned with a sawed-off shotgun, or, you know, the world collapsing in on itself through the own hubris of man, there's always someone or something that is the product of something gained through unscrupulous means that will come back to haunt you. And I really like that as a theming for what Doom 2016 and Doom Eternal have kind of done here, whether it's UAC, whether it's Argenta or Erdak or Hell, it's that Doom guy is the cleaner. He comes in when everything is lost, when everything is just being abused and drained past the point of sustainability.
Right. He's like the ultimate externality, the variable that you can't account for. He just doesn't fit into that picture that Erdak and Hell have drawn out for each other and for themselves.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break here, but stick around. We'll be right back.
Hey, everyone. I'm Abu.
And I'm Leo.
And we're here to tell you about Gom Jabbar, our brand new podcast all about Dune.
Gom Jabbar is your guide to Frank Herbert's massive sci-fi universe. We'll be exploring the themes, philosophies, and characters found in everything from Frank's iconic novels to the adaptations on film and TV.
And here's the thing. We do spoiler-filled deep dives as well as introductory non-spoiler episodes. So there's something for everyone.
You know, look, Dune is complicated. There are crazy words like mentats, like tleilaxu, and of course, Gom Jabbar.
Our goal is to help you understand these words and many more that we can't pronounce.
It's a theme. So find Gom Jabbar on your favorite podcast platform. We can't wait to share our love of the Dune universe, and we'll see you on the Golden Path.
I would say kind of one argument I'm trying to make here on this topic in this episode is that in some ways, in some situations, might sort of makes right. Since the Slayer is the only entity in the Doom Eternal setting who is both willing and able to stop the invasion of Earth, he kind of has a moral imperative to do so. And all the other consequences that mostly just affect the Makers and Hell, that's not his problem. I think on some level he understands that. Of course, we don't know because he never speaks. He doesn't really vocalize anything like that. But I think he probably acknowledges that and just puts it in the back of his mind and says, all right, well, I'm going to keep killing until I don't have to kill anymore. And that's it. And it's kind of like he's the only one who can, so he has to. And the system can end, so it should end. It's almost like it's inevitable. We've talked about inevitability a little bit today here, too. That kind of brings it back to that.
And I think that's something that we're going to be seeing a lot more as we delve and dive deeper into the lore of Doom, is inevitability, is this kind of understanding that this is, as we've been talking before, unstoppable forces and immovable objects. I think that's just going to be a constant theme that we'll be finding again and again and again, because the Doom Slayer, Doom Guy, is that guy. You know, he's just this guy who's here, and it's not like Spec Ops: The Line or any kind of like story where you have a lot of introspection, wondering what you're doing is right. It is literally, there is something on the screen that is either blocking my path or trying to kill me, and I need to destroy it. And you see just the world react to you. And I think that's one of my favorite parts about Doom, is how the world, I believe it's not shaped by Doomguy's actions, but it's reacting to Doomguy's presence.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, when you're growing up as a kid and your mom or your dad tells you, like, there's always going to be someone out there bigger than you, taller than you, smarter than you, stronger than you. And Doomguy is that.
Yeah.
He's that person who's going to beat you, who is that person. And they're always going to beat you. And I like that he's kind of metaphorically that kind of force.
Yeah. That's what I love about this game. It's that power fantasy. It's makes you feel so alive.
Well, that about wraps it up. We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please take a second to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us grow the show. And be sure to connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at lore_party. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.